Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Self-Control Through Torah. I'm David Gottlieb, a historian of Judaism and a member of the Faculty in Jewish Studies at the Spertus Institute for Jewish Learning and Leadership in Chicago.
And I'm Modia Silva in Toronto. I am a trauma therapist and an author.
And today we are joined by a special guest. Modia, please tell us about our guest.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks. And thank you, Avram. So Avram Rosenzweig has joined us for our fourth look or fourth investigation in the character trait of tzedek, of righteousness. Avram is a really special man, also in Toronto, and we'll say hello in a second. But Avram, I first came across, well, actually, I met Avram socially first many, many years ago through my sister. But then I came across Avram because he started a Jewish humanitarian organization, a charity in Toronto called Via Havta, that was just a gem. It still is. It still runs. But Avram's not at the helm anymore. But it was such a gem because it was the Jewish response to homelessness. And Via Havta drives around still today, every day around the greater Toronto area, delivering food and clothing and sleeping bags and everything that people who've experienced homelessness or are experiencing homelessness need. That was Avram's brainchild. And I think it's phenomenal. But today, Avram is a coach. He's a teacher. He's an artist. He's just one of those guys who does a lot of stuff, a lot of good stuff.
Who can't find his way.
So welcome, Avram. Thanks so much for joining us.
I really appreciate you guys inviting me. Thank you.
We're delighted to have you. I look forward to having a whole separate conversation with you at some point about addressing the issue of homelessness. One of my previous lives was as an affordable housing developer, and obviously it's a crushing issue all over the Americas. So we'll have a conversation about that another time. But for our listeners and for you, just a brief summary of sort of how the podcast works. So we have been going parsha by parsha through the Torah since we read Bereshit in the second half of October, using Rabbi Menachem Mendel Lefin's Cheshbon HaNefesh as a guide. We spend 4 weeks on one of the midot in Rabbi Lefin's guide, using his order. In the fourth week, we have a special guest. This week, that's you. And so we look in each Torah portion for lessons that might be gleaned on the midah that Rabbi Lefin is focusing on. So Modia and I do that alone for 3 weeks. The fourth week, we have a guest. As Modia pointed out, this is the final week focusing on the midah of tzedek, or righteousness. And we find ourselves looking for lessons in righteousness in Parshat Metzora in the book of Vayikra, in the book of Leviticus. And I wanted, Modia, if I may start off with a sort of opening question for Avram. Is that okay?
For sure.
So, Avram, we find ourselves in the midst of Parshiot in the book of Leviticus that may be as alien to the modern or postmodern sensibility as any in Torah, which I think means there's a great opportunity here. Because many times, you'll hear these read in shul. You might hear a drash that touches tangentially on the issue, at least in my world. But a lot of times people are puzzled about what can be learned in today's life from these parshiot. Now, on one level, this parsha, Metzora, along with the previous Tazria, they're usually read as a double Torah portion, but not in a leap year. Usually, these are on one level about the purification and reintegration of people whose health has required their temporary removal from the camp. I guess my question is, what can we learn from this today? What is the corollary today that we can learn from the temporary removal of people who have certain eruptions of the skin or other emissions that require their removal. What are we to learn from this today?
Right. So that's a great question, David. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
I have no idea. No, I'm kidding.
And that's the end of the show, folks.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. Yeah,
thank you for
I am blown away by these parshiot. And while a lot of people think that a discussion around or surrounding sacrifices is silly or all for naught, I don't think so at all. I think that if all of us were living 2,000 years ago, 2,500 years ago, and we had to in some way control our environment, because that's what we do. That's what we do. We have ministries and we have institutions nowadays to control the environment, right? Or to control poverty. Then I think that I would, and tell me if you guys agree, I think that I would look to my flock and I would say, I'm going to take the very best of my flock, and with a belief in a deity, which was ubiquitous, and it's always been that way, I'm going to offer it to God, you know, so that I can satiate God and let him know or her know that because I'm giving up my very best, that I'm willing to sacrifice in order for God to watch over me and to show my appreciation. Hakor Zatov, being Makir Tov, appreciating, to me is one of the most fundamental things in life. My mother, God bless her soul, she passed away about 6 years ago. She was a beautiful woman who she would constantly tell my siblings and I, if somebody did something really nice to us, really special, that we should go out of our way to make a phone call. But my mother was constantly writing journalists and telling them how beautiful it was that they had written such a supportive piece about Israel. And we were surrounded by this. This was Hakor Satov at its very best, appreciation at its very best. So I think the one thing that we take away from these parshiot, and if you read them with intent, if you really read them in such a way where, yeah, man, I can get something out of this, you'll see in essence what's happening here is that the Jewish people are saying to God, thank you so much for taking us out of Egypt. Well, we're going to let go of the idea that God took them into Egypt as well. We'll leave that alone for a second. And that you are watching over us through the cloud, through the manna, through the protection of us against other Amalek and other such people. So that's one. I think Hakor Satov is huge. Some people, you know, on Yom Kippur, I do services. I take people into the forest. I have what's called the forest shul. And we have like 25 or 30 people, and everybody grabs a tree, and we take the energy away from, you know, the outdoors, and we talk about introspection. And one of the things I say, you know, there's a school of thought that says, for appreciation, for thankfulness, the world was created. And I think there's something about that. Like if somebody comes up to you, Modja, or you, David, and said, listen, man, you have brought so much to me because of your shiur, because of your class. And I just want to tell you that I'm really, really grateful for the time that you've taken to make my life better. You just know what happens inside of you. You really have a great sense of holiness almost, right? Of tzedek. The second thing is that there is a strong school of thought. If I'm going on too long here, just let me know. I haven't done this podcast before. But there's a strong school of thought that what we're talking about when it comes to Tazria Mitzara is a response to Lashon Hara, right? Now this is really, really something, because in essence, according to that school of thought, what we're saying is like this. The three of us are sitting around, we're having a beer. It can be an American beer if you want.
And I'd rather not.
Chicago beer. And we're talking, and within our conversation, you know, we inevitably, because this seems to be, you know, sort of the underpinnings of humankind, we start, well, you know, we all know this guy and he's not such a great guy. And we go off on this riff about his weaknesses and really, you know, his not nice personality. What the Torah is saying is don't do that. Don't do that. Why? Because it breaks down the fiber of society. And we know, we've all spent time with people. I'm sure none of us here speak Lashon Hara. We've all been with people where by you're sitting there and listening, you go, my God, like why are you speaking so badly against these people? You know, just keep it to yourself, or if you have a gripe with them, talk to them. In other words, the idea that Lashon Hara can really, really destroy relationships, can destroy a person's reputation, it's very real, and we've all seen it. The Torah comes along and says, yeah, this thing is so big. You know, there's a Midrash, I believe, or a Chazal who say that Lashon Hara is worse than all those three commandments of which we're supposed to die for. That's how big Lashon Hara, Shfichat Damim, Gilui Arayot, and Avodah Zarah, you know, spilling blood, incestual behavior, and bowing down to sacrifice. That's how big it is. I think the takeaway from this is, as big as it seems, or as trite as it might seem to some people, that God is telling Moshe Rabbeinu to tell the Bnei Yisrael, look it, if you want your camp to operate in a holy way through tzedek, then Lashon Hara cannot happen. And that is why your sister Miriam was punished. Yeah.
That's amazing. I love this platform that you've just built, Avram, because we've talked about speech before related to tzedek, to righteousness. And I just find it really fascinating that when we talk about what do I have to do now in 2024, in this year, to become more righteous, and we always have to come back to how we use our language, how we use our lips. And in Orchot Tzadikim, one of the big Musar texts, The Path of the Righteous, it says, actually, it's in the gate of Nedivut, the gate of generosity. There's a quote from Yeshayahu. It says, great is tzedakah. And then there's this quote from Yeshayahu, chapter 63, verse 1, that says, it's Hashem speaking. It's, I speak with tzedakah, mighty to save. So it's puzzling. Like, initially, it was puzzling to me. It's like, what do you mean you speak with tzedakah? I think I just give tzedakah. Like, I go find someone on the street and I give them some money. But this is, I speak with tzedakah. So I speak with righteousness, right? And so we talk in these parshiyot about stay away from Lashon Hara, but then there's the flip side. It's like, Sur Meirah Va'aseh Tov. It's like, stop doing bad, but then also you have to Aseh Tov. You have to do good as well. So it's not enough just to withhold yourself from speaking Lashon Hara.
Nice,
you
yes.
Then have to use your lips to speak acts of, like, to speak words of righteousness, right?
Yes.
And doesn't that also, Moja, that quote maybe also mean that when you give tzedakah, it's God speaking through you?
Beautiful. I love that. Yes. Yeah, yeah.
So one of God's languages is the generosity that we display. And that's, I think, part of what Rabbi Leffen says when he writes about the Midah of Righteousness. He says, I love this paragraph, if I can just read this whole paragraph, because I think it speaks to these Parshiot and Vayikra. It is true that in our times we do not know how all of the Torah can be seen as being condensed within this precept of living in righteousness. So he's saying it all comes down to tzedek. Just as we lack the ability to answer the questions of the Yetzer Hara, or the nations regarding the reasons for the prescription of Shatnez or the Para Aduma. In other words, there's regulations we simply don't understand, but to build a righteous society, we do them. Notwithstanding this lack of knowledge, we do know that this discipline, that means to live righteously, obligates us in a number of precepts which are in the area of interpersonal relationships, e.g., avoiding robbery, theft, taking advantage, cheating, jealousy, hatred, or informing. Moreover, this obligation also includes the positive precept of performing acts of loving kindness. So there's a deep tie between tzedek and gemilut chasidim. And so, Avram, I wanted to ask you, maybe to reflect a little bit on your work, as it reflects on this idea, the work that you initiated by creating this organization to address homelessness. Was there a Jewish value? Was there a Jewish text? What was the impetus for you to do that?
Right. Good question. I just, as an addendum to what you were saying, I just want to add, I remember really focusing on the concept of Maaser Sheni, the second tithe. And I got so incredibly excited about it because, in essence, the mitzvah of Maaser Sheni is that you give a certain amount of your produce and you can cash it in and you take it up to Jerusalem and you eat it there, you share it, right? And then I discovered that the reason for that was that you should be in the holy city and that you should basically hobnob with the righteous. And I thought, my God, what a beautiful concept that is.
Yeah.
You know, just walk through that in your head for a second. Okay, it's the end of the year, or it's actually every few years. And you take your Maaser Sheni, and there you go. You're walking up the road, and all kinds of celebratory things are happening as Jerusalem welcomes you. And you sit, and you meet the righteous who live in Jerusalem, and you share your food with them, and you listen to what they have to say. And what I took away from that was it's really so important who you hang out with. You know, we all know that with our kids. We all, and our parents told us this, you are who your friends are, you know. And now as we get older, we say, yeah, there's something about that. So it's very clear that God is creating a structure for us whereby we can actualize the goodness within us. We can actualize the tzedek within us. But by the same token, God is saying to us, listen, you need to watch these people in action. I often watch Rav Asher Weiss. I don't know if either of you watch his shiurim. The man is brilliant, brilliant. Like when they say that, you know, we could not write another Gemara today, I'm not so sure. When I listen to Rav Asher Weiss, his Mikorot, the text of which he quotes is right on his tongue and he's not reading any notes. And I look at this man, I go, my God, what a righteous man. And he shows himself as a tzaddik, and he cries. He cried during COVID for the loss of our people and for the loss within our world that we all share. So I think the idea is not only to actualize that goodness which lies within you and it lies within all of us, but also to watch those people who sort of set the bar for it. In 1994, Rwanda happened, and there was a war in the Balkans as well. And I was deeply disturbed, like everybody else, by the fact that up to 1 million people were macheted to death, really before our eyes, in Rwanda. And I thought to myself, you know what? If we are to say never again, then we have to mean it. That if we are to step up when an injustice at this level happens in front of our eyes every night, 6 o'clock on the news, then we need to be there and we need to respond. And I wasn't satisfied, at least with the Canadian Jewish response. I wasn't. You know, we have spent so much time and effort on Holocaust education, millions and millions, billions of dollars. And yet when something like this was happening, whereby we could play a role in helping out people, maybe not stopping the war, but helping out people, then we have to do it. Otherwise, I think that the idea of never again was just full of holes. So I ultimately said, yeah.
No, well, so I want to ask a question on that because when David and I have spent time learning Musa, learning and practicing Musa, yeah, we always learn about limits, about a Bechira point, about a choice point, and that you can have too much of 1 meter or too little of 1 meter, mm-hmm, and you mm-hmm have to find your point.
That's
so
true.
I want to say, with the example you just gave, last Shabbat, the head of the Zaka Southern Command, Yossi Landau, came to the shul that I was at. And Zaka, for those who don't know, is the organizer, is the volunteer organization in Israel that goes to tragic events and retrieves as much of as many bodies as they can that have been killed, massacred, destroyed, with the view that the body has to be buried in as much totality as possible. It's a volunteer organization, 3,000 people strong. And he is the head of the Southern Command. And after October 7th, he was in charge because everything happened in the South. And after he had done all his work with all his volunteers, he was destroyed. So he's doing this act of tzedek, of being righteous. And he said that he couldn't look at his children or his grandchildren's eyes in the eye for 10 weeks. So his wife went to the head of Zaka and said, he's destroyed. He has post-traumatic stress. It's like, should he continue to volunteer for Zaka or not? And the answer was he should double down. Yes, he could back out if he wants, but the recommendation is he should double down because as you say, it's like when there's such a big event, are we as the Jewish people going to walk away from it? Or are we going to double down and say, this is what we do? Like, this is how we develop tzedek.
You know, you speak to a lot of interesting points there.
Yeah.
Well, one point is that tzedek is not always fun. by any stretch.
So
sometimes
true.
it's awful. It really is awful. When I was running Via Hofden, I ran it for about 20 years. You know, people would often come to me, they go, wow, it's so good what you do. You know, you must be so excited about life. And there were times where I would sort of put my head down and I go, oh man, this is really, really terrible. Actually, it's a terrible time in my life. Because when you go out into the streets and you kneel down so that you can look directly in the eyes of a person who is homeless or who's living close to the street, you look in their eyes, as you were saying, Moja, and you see such pain and suffering. And you think to yourself, Rabbeinu Shlalem, like, how is this person supposed to deal with this lot? It's so bad. I remember we held a big party for homeless people, which we used to do a lot of these, and we would give away gifts and clothing. And once we actually gave away a condominium for someone to live in for 6 months, they never showed up. But this guy I interviewed, his name was Bob. And I said, Bob, I'll be honest with you. You look pretty good. Like, you're dressed well, and your demeanor, you seem to be well put together. I said, would you mind telling our listeners, we were interviewing him on commercial radio, and would you mind telling our listeners exactly what is it about you that's homeless? He goes, well, I'll tell you, Avram. He goes, a few years ago, there was a big fire in my house, and my wife and my daughter and my mother-in-law were burnt to death. And he goes, I can never go back inside. And when you hear these stories, of which they are regular, you realize that Moshe Rabbeinu, fighting on behalf of the Jewish people and all the tzuras that he went through, one can only say that he must have had a very, very rich life. But on the other hand, he must have suffered terribly because of his tzedek. And Moja, I think that's a really important point that you make as to this fellow going back and doing his work. Because tzedek is not easy, and it's not always fun.
I just want to chime in with some personal experience on that front too. Not only can it be emotionally wrenching, it can be physically dangerous. I had in my work as an affordable housing developer, I felt there was a mission really to, first of all, the nonprofit commits 75% of the money it makes to provide supportive services to the residents, to increase their access to opportunity, their access to counseling and other supportive services. So 75 cents of every dollar it made went to that effort, but it also put a priority on trying to site affordable housing in communities where opportunity was available. And that meant these were communities oftentimes that didn't have affordable housing and didn't want it. And there was more than one meeting where I had to be receive a police escort out of the meeting because people wanted to do me physical harm for representing the organization that was doing this work. But I think part of the common theme here and in these last parshiot is different levels of purity. We start with Lashon Hara because we have to purify the person. We move to understanding that this kind of rot can even extend to buildings, to understand that literally and metaphorically speaking, this can spread to communities and institutions. And in Acharei Mot, which we'll read next, not next week, but it's the next Torah portion, it's about purifying the sanctuary. And this order of things is very deliberate. You cannot dwell in holiness, really, unless you have, unless you are working diligently to purify yourself and purify your house, as it were. And I, it sounds like that that's the work that that you have been engaged in. And kol hakavod, by the way.
Yeah, and kol hakavod to you as well. I just to add to the point that I was making before, and to really build upon what you're saying, is that God gives us very, very challenging jobs. And I think that one of the weaknesses in our community, the Jewish community today, is that tikkun olam, repairing the world, has become sexy, right?
So interesting.
You make sandwiches for the homeless and you feel really great about yourself. And I'm not taking away from anybody. I just did a bar mitzvah meeting last night with a kid I'm going to be facilitating for his bar mitzvah. And that's what they did. That was their mitzvah thing. And of course, there is something good about that. But what I saw within my home, my father was a rabbi. Hence, my father, my mother was a rebbetzin. My parents were old-time rabbi and rebbetzin, which meant that they brought people into our home to live with us. And sometimes it was for a day, sometimes a week, sometimes a month, sometimes a year. And there was someone who lived with us for 2 years. And these were not easy people. One of the individuals whom we brought home rewarded my parents for their goodness by stealing their Visa card and going downtown and buying a whole load of clothes and other such things. So this was not unusual. And this is what you face when you deal with difficulties like that in our society, challenges. But I was taught by my parents that when somebody is in the street and they look at you and it's very clear that they need you to respond because you can to their welfare, to their challenges, then you do. Mm-hmm. Very interesting thing is that there was a sociologist in Israel, and I can't remember her name, who did a study with righteous Gentiles. And she asked each and every one of them, I think there was about 350 in the study. She asked each and every one of them, why did you do what you did? Why did you decide on saving a Jewish life at the risk of your life, much more so the risk of your children? Mm-hmm. The answer was the same across the board. The answer was because when we were little and we would be walking along the streets with our parents and we would see someone sitting by the side of the road, our parents would instruct us to go over, kneel down so that you're eye to eye with them, and ask them, how are they? How are you doing? How's your day? I'd like to get to know you a little bit, and to help them in any way possible. We have to sacrifice for tzedek. We have to sacrifice for tzedek.
Wow. I think that's very powerful. Both of you, thank you for sharing those stories. Yeah, I'm almost speechless, but not quite. So I want to maybe bring him back to a quote. So in the Gemara, in Sukkah 49b, I think there's a single line that sums up all the stories you've just told, and maybe it takes it out of the heart and back to the head. But it says that the mitzvah of charity, the mitzvah of tzedakah, is equivalent to all the sacrifices. So we're talking about all these sacrifices in last week's Parsha, this week's Parsha, and then we're told in the Gemara that tzedakah is equivalent to all of that stuff. And you're right, it's really tough sometimes, right? If I can tell a story, I was in Jerusalem in December, and I got to go to Rabbi Machlis's for Shabbat dinner, for Friday night dinner. He and his late wife were the epitome of chesed, of loving kindness. They have, over the three meals of Shabbat, they hosted something like 250 people each week. So at the end of our Friday night dinner, this young man goes up to Rabbi Machlis, and Rabbi Machlis says, how are you doing? And he's like, not well at all. I'm really doing badly. And then he proceeds to tell him how bad his life is. And Rabbi Machlis says, is there one thing you could do that would improve your life just a tiny, tiny bit? And the guy, this young man, thinks for a second, then goes, no, not at all. Rabbi Machlis pauses and then says, how about now?
That's beautiful.
Yeah, right.
And the good kid's like, yeah, still not. And then he leaves. And then as I was getting ready to leave, like 15 minutes later, he comes back into the house to go sit with Rabbi Machlis. So something happens, but to get over the hurdle, it takes it's a big challenge sometimes. It's like, how do you lift yourself up? And we're talking about tzedek, how to into greater righteousness. How do you lift yourself up when you feel it's too much for you? Like, how did Yossi Landau of Zaka go back into that house that he for sure did not want to go into?
And I think that the Parsha actually gives a partial answer to that. In Vayikra 14:40, it talks about in 39, this is again about purifying the house that is afflicted with tzarat. On the seventh day, the priest shall return. If he sees that the plague has spread on the walls of the house, the priest shall order the stones with the plague in them to be pulled out and cast outside the city in an impure place. A lot of commentary focuses on Habayit HaMenugah, the afflicted house, as being a moral warning, and that the stones that are being pulled out are actually being pulled out of our heart. Our house is the divine house, and the stones that are afflicted are the stones of blockage within us that occlude the flow of divine energy through us in the form of tzedakah and gemilut chasidim, among other things. These are the other midot that Rabbi Leffen says are so critical to tzedek. So when we're reading about and talking about this, I think, how do we get there? We pull the stones out of our heart. That is the ongoing job.
But could I just add a quick story before I think we're about to wrap up here? About tzedek, just a tip so that your listeners can take away something from this of a practical nature. I invited a fellow to to speak to my staff a few years ago, Erwin Ellman. And basically Erwin's job was, you know, legally he was responsible for the children of Ontario, a province in Canada, in particular the native community, right? That was his job, okay? An ombudsman, sort of. And he told a story about how when he was in grade 3, and he had a very difficult upbringing, very, very difficult home life, you know, as many people do. And his teacher came over and stood by him one morning and said, I want everyone to know that Erwin is an outstanding writer. And it's a kid who's like 8 years old, right? And we're going to write a newsletter, and the front page of the newsletter is going to be about the Toronto Maple Leafs, not the Chicago Blackhawks, David.
Oh, come on now.
And David's and Erwin's going to write it. Anyways, long and short, he writes it, and she reads it to the class, and she says, Erwin, you are an outstanding writer, right? And one day you're going to be known for your writing, maybe even your sports writing. And Erwin told this story because I said to him, I said, how is it that in a home where a child has to step over her inebriated mother every single morning, a 7-8-year-old has to dress herself, she has to make her lunch. Why? Because her father's not there. And her mother is just way too drunk and hungover to do anything for that child. How is it that often that child grows up to be something special? How do they get past that? And Erwin's response was that story. He said, look, when you say a fine or a good word of instruction or of support to a child, that stays with them for the rest of their lives. I said, Erwin, one comment. He goes, very often one comment. What that teacher told me, I carried with me. And in the worst of times when I was feeling down about myself, I remembered what she said, Erwin, you're a fine, fine writer. So my point is that if you can say a good word to somebody, do it. If you're walking through the supermarket and you see the cashier is just so tired, just ask her for her welfare or ask him how his day is going. Comment on the brilliance that they have of packing bags. And trust me, if you put your eggs at the top of the bag, okay, there's a good chance they're going to break. These people know how to pack bags. Don't undermine that. Be good to people and go out of your way to say something nice to somebody that will touch their heart.
That is fantastic. Avram, a couple of episodes ago, we were talking about Tanya the Chabad Sefer.
Yes.
And we were talking about how it presents a tzaddik and a rasha as the extremes, and then it has the in-between as the binoni in the middle, which is the 95% of us. And and we've struggled for the last few weeks thinking about, could we possibly become a tzaddik? Could we increase our level of tzedek, of righteousness? Because it seems to be reserved for the top 1%.
I always tell Mudja that he could.
Yes. Not. He does. And I always humbly say, not a chance. But
yeah.
But I love what you've said, because it really brings it back down to earth and says, no, we can all increase our righteousness.
I think that's the lesson of Moshe Rabbeinu in the biblical characters, Mojo. I think it's the idea, the beauty of Judaism is that we don't prop anybody up and say they're not human. Yes, there will never be another prophet like Moshe Rabbeinu. Absolutely. But he had his foibles and he was very clearly human. I think the beauty of our religion is that it tells us you can grow, you can become better, you can develop and enhance your spirit and your soul, your neshama, and become just an absolutely amazing human being in terms of tzedek. I do believe that strongly.
And I think you've helped us learn a lot about how even these parshiot, which can seem inscrutable to many, really focus on the issue of Lashon Hara as a key element in our development in that direction. Agreed. Avram, before we go, it wouldn't be right of us as fellow podcasters to sign off without asking you to talk a little bit about your own podcast.
Yeah, thanks, David. I appreciate that a lot. So I've been doing interviewing for many, many years. I was on commercial radio here in Toronto for about 10 years, CFRB, Talk 640. Mudja would know those channels. And I love nothing more than sitting down with somebody and talking to them about their lives, because I find humankind is fascinating. I really do. It's amazing that each and every one of us is a world unto ourselves. And it bothers me that I will never, ever meet that elderly man in some distant province in China who's scraping his knees and bruising his elbow, just like I am. But I'll never know him. Of the 8 billion people in the world, how many people will we actually meet? And even more so, how many people will we actually have a chance to talk to and get to know? So I have a podcast, which is called The Avram Rosenzweig Show. Creative, right?
It's memorable.
And essentially how I qualify the podcast is, this is a podcast about humankind and our beauty and the inspirational stories that we have to tell. And I tell you something, no matter who it is, you give me any person and I will do an interview with them and I will find that diamond within, because we all have it. I'm convinced that we all have this gift that God has given us, which we need to actualize in our very short time here on earth. So my show is all about that. I just, both Jewish and non-Jewish, although my focus had been more so on Jewish since October 7th. But I interviewed a fellow recently by the name of Mitch Shavalo. Mitch is the son of George Shavalo, who fought Muhammad Ali twice. Yeah, he's a Canadian heavyweight champion. In fact, I went to visit George yesterday, who has dementia, but I wanted that opportunity to say goodbye to him. And Mitch told us stories about how he survived the suicide of his three brothers and his mother. And if you listen to Mitch talk and the strength of his soul, you can't help but look at it and go, my God, what an outstanding human being this is. How can I learn from this person? What can I take away from it? 2 weeks ago, I interviewed Nir Mamon, who Nir Mamon is 47 years old. He has five children. He lives in Richmond Hill in Toronto, which is the northern part of the city. Nir Mamon at 47 decided after October 7th, he was going to go back and fight in Gaza. He's a Krav Maga specialist and a security specialist. So he has those tools. But I said to him, how did you make a decision between fatherhood and being a husband and going to Gaza and fighting? He says, the two were not separate. The two were together. I did this because I'm a Jew. I do this because I'm defending our people and my family. Long and short of it is, you listen to these people speak and you hear just these grains of courage and grains of bravery and the struggles that we all go through and how difficult life is. And then those moments of joy and positivity, and you can't help but think to yourself, you know what? That's not so much different than me. It's called the Avram Rosenzweig Show. And I got a lot of videos out there. Take a look on YouTube. And if you can subscribe, I really appreciate it. And that's the show.
Beautiful. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, David.
It's clear from this conversation that you are a skilled interviewer and interlocutor. And I'm sure that I know from the episode that I've watched that you bring out the best in people, which is a wonderful quality. So thank you for joining us on this episode of Self Control Through Torah. We really appreciate it. For our listeners, we've been discussing Parshat Metzora and the Midah of Tzedek or righteousness. Just a little bit of housekeeping. Moja and I will be recording an episode on Acharei Mot, but that Parsha is not read during Pesach, which is hard upon us. So there will be no episode next week, but the following week you'll be able to tune in to that episode when Moja and I move on to the Midah of Kimutz or frugality, which will be a really interesting 4-week journey into understanding how to shepherd and wisely use resources of all kinds, not just money. So our guest today has been Avram Rosenberg, founder
Rosenzweig.
Of Ve'ahavta. I'm sorry, Avram Rosenzweig, like Franz Rosenzweig. I got your name wrong. It's terrible. It's right in front of me, too. Avram Rosenzweig, the founder of Ve'ahavta, podcaster, author, interlocutor, lover of Israel. We really appreciate your being
with us.
Thank you.
You guys are really good, by the way. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you so much. And please tell your friends and listeners about us. I'm David Gottlieb. Thank you so much for listening.
Yeah, and I'm Modia Silva, and we'll see you next time.
Chag Sameach.
Chag Sameach.
Yeah, Chag Sameach.